Going back to school, finding a new approach to the same field, remarrying, jumping into group living, climbing mountains, launching a dream career, that's not the traditional face of retirement. But in 2017, retirement has a whole new meaning. Longevity, improved health, and new attitudes are changing the game for baby boomers as they hit retirement age. Our guest today, and talking about her book, The New Senior Man, is Thelma Reese. Dr. Reese is a passionate expert on retirement. She's a retired professor of English and education. She created the Advisory Council for Hooked on Phonics and was its spokesperson in the 90s. She also directed the Mayor's Commission on Literacy for the City of Philadelphia. She has appeared frequently on television and hosted a cable show in Philadelphia. She also helped found Philadelphia Young Playwrights, chaired the Board of Children's Literacy Initiative, and organized the World Symposium on Family Literacy at UNESCO in Paris in 1994. And it's our pleasure today to have her discussing The New Senior Man, Thelma Reese. Hi, Thelma.
Hi, Wynn. Thanks so much for having me.
I found your book very interesting. I think that retirement 20 years ago for men was different than it is today. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think particularly for men who were raised at a time when the culture said to boys, whenever they were found themselves in a vulnerable position, to man up, not show their vulnerability, not cry if the ball was coming at them when they were little boys, to withhold any kind of expression of emotion. And that has served people well in some ways, not so well now that we're living much longer lives.
Right.
So when people come to the retirement stage of life, these years, and find that they have lots of years ahead of them, fortunately, we thank medical science for that, but they often don't know anymore who they are and don't know how to live in the world as somebody who is very vulnerable.
Well, you and I were talking before we started about suicide rates in men on retirement, and back years ago, the highest rate of suicide was in the 12 months immediately preceding retirement, and we concluded that that was probably because back then, men's whole lives were tied up in the job that they did, their ego, their self-esteem had to do with what's your job, how much money do you make, and these kind of things. And then when that rapidly terminated at whatever age that they retired, they didn't have that to fall back on anymore. That was a problem. But you said that you think it's getting to be less of a problem as we move along.
Well, another thing I think that really contributed to that feeling of shock and isolation when people retired or were anticipating retirement, pardon me, it's that often for men, their social lives as well were really tied up in their workplace. Men were unlikely to have the same kinds of friendship and support that women have always had. Women have always gravitated toward other women and shared experience and life with them, and so they had this emotional support. When a man would leave the workplace or the career that he's had, he often lost touch with the people that he worked with and didn't realize he was relying on so much in the case of emotional support as well. But now, when people are facing not one job, but most likely six or seven statistically in their lifetime, from the time they're young and get out into the workforce, they're more accustomed to change. So it looks like they may be more resilient when a job ends, when they reach a certain age. They're accustomed to change in the way they work and how they work and where they work. They also seem, certainly among millennials and even boomers, to be forming more associations with other men that are social in nature, and often, whether it's through their churches or through their other aspects of their lives, even book groups, are coming together in groups that share experience, and that offers a lot of emotional support.
Well, you may or may not know, but most of my adult life, I've been working in the field of addiction, and I think that addictions are caused by two things. One, low self-esteem, not feeling good enough about yourself for whatever reason, and two, lack of spiritual understanding where your place in the universe is. And I know that the idea of wanting to commit suicide or thinking about it is one of the psychological symptoms of the disease. So when we as men get older, it seems to me that, from the men that I know, that they have fewer of the more typical type addictive problems than they did when they were younger men. And so that kind of changes a little bit the way that I try to counsel them. But still, addiction is addiction, and I believe that it follows us from birth to the grave. And so it's something that I've been thinking about, and more recently, now that I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Years ago, when I was teaching young people, I found that as I met young men who came to the community college where I was working, who were in their 20s, some of them had had really difficult teenage years. The ones that I was meeting had already made a huge change in just going back to school. And I found that with maturity, if they got past a certain stage, they were much more likely to have decent lives after that. But I think getting over some of these things, and when you talk about self-esteem, that rings so true with me. I think also in writing the book about the new senior man, finding that people who, and they tell their own stories, but to me it seemed as though the most successful people in terms of their own living are directed somewhat outside of themselves as well as their own personal development. Part of that personal development is what they do for other people, what they find as something to put energy and thought into when they're working that way for other people. It absolutely changes the way they feel about themselves. So that we call this a gift of time, living to this oldest generation that ever was. And it's such an opportunity to continue our own development. And the men who do that have very successful, positive experiences in aging.
You said that senior men are staging a quiet revolution of their own, taking on new challenges and following their passions at 70, 80, and well into their 90s. Did you find this as research for your book, or did you just see it in the community that you live in? What was the basis for that statement?
Well, the basis for it was the many interviews we did. We were looking, as we did in the book that we had written about women, The New Senior Woman, we were looking at that time for role models for ourselves. My late partner, Barbara Fleischer, and I were in our 70s, and we looked around at other retired professors like ourselves, and retired people in general, or people around our age, and thinking, wait a minute, some of these people are saying, oh, I've never been busier. Retirement, I'm just exhausted from everything I'm doing. Well, it turned out that what they were doing often was playing bridge, which is fine. I have nothing against it. I don't play, but my partner did. Or really focusing on their own appearance to a degree that it made them unhappy because they saw signs of aging. But we were looking for people who thought they were doing fine and really were. And we got their own stories. They tell their stories in their own words. The same is true with the men. We found that men have, in some ways, even more challenges because they have lived through a time when their wives have changed so much. Their partners, they have lived through the women's revolution in a way that women didn't. They've had to adjust to the changes, and in the case of couples, they have to adjust to each other's changes. You know, there's a funny saying about the woman whose husband retires, and she says, I married him for better or worse, but not for lunch. So all of a sudden, having somebody home all day is a new wrinkle.
Yes.
And they add a new wrinkle.
Okay, so I've got some questions here that you provided me. I'd like to go over some of those questions. And the first one is, why women are traditionally better prepared to retire than men?
Well, they are because they have this social network. There are very few women who don't have at least a few intimate friends other than their husbands. Whether they're married or single, women have other women friends, and they have this emotional outlet and support that most men lack.
I don't see that as changing, to tell you the truth.
Well, I think it is actually changing a bit. In fact, when we started working on this book, we found a group in Riverdale, New York, that had been meeting. A social worker had put it together when he was in his 40s, but the men ranged in age from 65 to 95, and they met regularly every month for years. And Bobby and I went to meet these men and had a session with them. Pardon me. And the first thing that the man sitting next to her in the circle said was, he turned to her and said, well, you want to talk about virility or senility? Which we found hilarious, but actually, it was a nice thing to learn that these men really got together and formed this kind of friendship that was great. I also met a pastor who's in the book who has worked with men for so many years, very young men, his own family, and is fascinating to read about because he has started men's groups and worked with men all over the world. So this is changing, definitely. Men are becoming more open and finding outlets, and the men in this book, we interviewed about 100 and roughly 50 are in there, and they come from all walks of life, all kinds of backgrounds and experience, and all economic levels. The only thing they have in common is they're all Americans, and they are all doing things that are worth reading, because it's not that men will imitate what any one of these men is doing. It's that they will be inspired to do their own thing, to follow something that is perhaps new to them or deepens their understanding of what they always really were interested in.
Well, speaking of what people are interested in, let's hit the next point, how to resolve sex and intimacy issues in retirement.
Well, one of the ways, first of all, I always want to say to men who are sexually active, to all seniors who are, to please be aware that sexually transmitted diseases affect seniors as well as younger people. And some people have the mistaken identity because, pardon me, they may not be fathering children or they may not be bearing children, that they're immune now, and they're not. And there is a rise in sexually transmitted disease among seniors, particularly in senior living places. So that's a caution. The other thing is people have to know and understand themselves and understand the basis of what is a loving relationship. And that may change. And we should know about adjusting to the realization that intimacy may take different forms. And that is it's an expression of caring, of friendship, of love. And it is something that is always consensual and pleasurable for the people involved. And it may change, it may morph to something as close and intimate as a hug. It isn't necessarily the same, doesn't necessarily take the form it did when you were younger. Or it may.
Yeah. Okay, you talked about isolation in men after retirement. Why does isolation take a physical toll on a man, and how to...
There's no question, and I imagine that you know this even better than I, because you're a medical doctor too, but to be isolated can affect all kinds of things physically. First of all, you're unlikely to be eating properly when you're not doing it with somebody else. And you are unlikely to be getting out, exercising, doing whatever is good for your health when you are isolated and alone. Depression, of course, is very possible with isolation, much more than in a social situation. It's probably one of the leading causes of earlier death than needs to be. And most of all, when you're still alive, you have this gift of time. Spending it all alone is so unhealthy, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, in every way. This is really the worst downside of aging.
And as an adjunct to that, How do we deal with the separation and loss factors that come up in retirement?
There is absolutely no one who lives who doesn't suffer loss. It's not only necessarily the loss of a person, it can even be the loss of one's position in the world, the loss of a job, the loss of a pet. It is how we deal with it, and there has been a lot of really good research on dealing with grief and loss, some of which we talk about in the book and refer people to. But learning to deal with it is what matters, because you can't ignore it, and you have to accept it, and you have to understand that it is part of living.
Yes.
But it's not an easy part.
So, how do my listeners today get a copy of your book, Thelma?
They can look up A New Senior Man on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com and get the book that way. They can go to my blog, which is www.elderchicks.com. Some of your listeners may know Elder Chicks. It's been a blog for 12 years now. 10 years. And I hope they will. I think it's really good for men to read, and I think it's really good for women who are living with men, who are mothers of men, who are wives of men and sisters and daughters of men, to try to understand that what men are going through is really as difficult as what women go through, sometimes more so. And I think right now, too, in our culture, it's a time to be a little more understanding of men.
So what is your advice with respect to talking about retirement-related depression and anxiety? What can men do that will...
I think what men can do, and I hope they would be inspired by some of the people in this book to do it, is to immediately join something positive. Just go. Just take a course. Not just on your computer, although that's a good thing to do, but do it at a senior center. Do it at a house of worship of whatever your religion is. Do it somewhere where you will be interacting with other people. You may not think it's such an important thing to do at first, but it is, and it will become an important thing in your life. Do something for somebody else.
I remember back maybe 6-7 years ago, I did a mastermind brainstorming type group. We met every Wednesday morning before the work hour, but most of the people that were coming had retired, and we got an opportunity to discuss things with a diverse group of people, and it seemed to enhance their feelings of self-worth and self-esteem in that they were doing something that the other people in the group deemed important, and so that might be one thing, a weekly group that...
I go to a monthly group about positive aging, and all the people in that group inspire me, because they're all doing things that are really in some way helping other people, and very different things, from working with people in prisons to marching for peace or whatever really is important to them personally, but it changes into something that is good for other people, and it does make you feel that you're worthwhile, you're needed. Everybody needs to be needed.
Well, my philosophy is that each of us on the planet was born with some type of mission or purpose in their life, and if they can figure out what that is and then start doing it, they'll have a totally different and more beautiful life. And
absolutely, and it never feels like work.
No, it doesn't.
feels like living.
If you only do what you would passionately do without getting paid for it, you never go to work.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And also, I like to remember what Dada, one of the oldest people in the book, he's 92, said that he really firmly believes and practices. Pain is not the same as suffering. So when we encounter pain, which just about all of us will as we age, something will hurt, something will ache, that's not suffering.
No, and your mental outlook has a lot to do with how much you give in to pain.
True, and as we would say in Philadelphia, with our pronunciation of the word, it's about attitude. A lot of it is about attitude or attitude.
Yeah.
And if you can keep that positive, you've gotten a long way.
Back in my past, maybe between 5 and 10 years ago, I had some back problems with nerves coming out of my spine that were causing pain and sciatica, and the doctors did everything that they knew to do at the time and didn't help a whole lot. But even in the times of the greatest pain symptoms, I found one thing that I could do other than taking medicine or physical therapy or heating pads or whatever, was to sing. And
really?
And I like gospel, so I would go over and crank up my karaoke and sing gospel.
Oh, how great!
And, you know, it took my whole focus off the pain and onto something else.
Uh-huh.
For that period of time that I was doing that, I didn't have any pain.
Isn't that marvelous? Yeah. Oh, I absolutely. If I could only sing at least sing enough or well enough that everyone didn't flee the room when I did it.
You know what they say about singing in the shower. That's where you get your most applause.
Right.
Okay, so another point that you made was you need to rethink retirement from career end to career shift. And you said that we might have as many as 5 or 6 different careers in our lifetimes, all with different kind of motivations, and they might not be the same type of thing, might be different kind of things. I think...
Yes, that's true. There are often different things. And another trend that I see in younger people coming up is they kind of expect that in a way that their fathers and grandfathers did not. And they're also raising their boys very differently. They're raising their children very differently. They're involved in ways, and I live next door to a preschool, so I have seen this over the last 35 years that I've lived in this house. And who's coming mostly in the mornings? Daddies.
Oh.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. One of the things that I have found in my work with people who need to raise their self-esteem in order to get out of the clutches of various types of addictions is creativity will do that. And I either paint or sculpt or make a piece of jewelry every day of my life, unless I'm sick or something like that. And I get a lot of positive feedback by that accomplishment of doing something creative. And I would just say to the men that are listening to this program, if you haven't started something like that, whether it be wood carving or any number of different things that you could do, go take a course and jump into it. You'll find that it really makes a difference in your attitude.
I'm so glad you picked up on the Philadelphia pronunciation of that word.
Yeah.
You could spread it around. That's so true. I just met a man who told me, well, he had been a math teacher for so many years, but he said, now I'm a poet. He's identifying himself as a poet because where he lives, a poetry course was given, and he thought, oh, well, he's sort of floundering. And he's discovered in himself not only an ability, but a real desire to write. And he's doing that every day.
Well, writing is creativity.
Right.
And so regardless of what you try to write, if you put words to paper, you're going to have a better mental outlook as a result of that, in my opinion.
I agree.
Okay, you want to give us some advice how to stay active without injury.
Well, it is important to recognize changes. And my own example is that I live in a four-story house. Our children really think we should be on one floor, but they recognize that we like living here, and we've made it safe as possible. So there are handles to hold on to. We try not to fall down too much and to be careful and look where we're going. Falling really does become a problem for many people as they age. So it's being sensible about and really trying to pay attention to any hazards. And fascinating thing is that we're living in a time, and you know this better than I, when conditions or diseases that used to be fatal can now be chronic. People live with cancer, with all kinds of things that they couldn't live with even 25 years ago. These are miraculous changes for people. And to be aware of what the hazards are and not be foolhardy is just sensible.
I'd like to give our listeners two ideas of safety as a result of as you're getting older. One of them is, as you pointed out, since falling has the highest mortality rate in people our age, you don't want to fall. So get enough light into your environment that you can see what you're getting ready to trip over.
Oh, so true.
These little night lights, they only cost a dollar at the dollar store, and they don't run up your electric bill. But the difference between seeing where you're stepping could mean the difference between life and death.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's see, what was the other thing? You know, as you get older, your memory kind of goes, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what we did. I had back surgery, fortunately, very successfully, last June. And while I was in the hospital, my husband did what we should have done years ago and adapted our bathroom so that, and it was less costly than we expected, and we got rid of the tub and put in a stall shower with plenty of handlebars, and we put a seat in there, which I no longer need to use, but I did when I was recovering, so that I don't have to step over that tub. And took another bar and put it outside my office so that when I step up the two steps to get in, I hold on to it. There are things that you learn to hold on to and do that become part of the way you live and walk.
Yeah. I think as we're aging, we don't need to be as hurried and fast as we did when we were kids.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
It doesn't make any difference if it takes another 15 seconds to get across the room.
Exactly.
You need to, you know, be careful with what you're doing and be...
And keep the path clear.
Yeah, that's it. Light up the path, and then once you've lit it up, clear it out.
Right.
Okay. So, the last point, why spirituality can have hidden benefits for retirees. I'm big on this one. We'll see what you have to say.
Well, I think aside from traditional thoughts about it, I think the idea of connection that spirituality brings, it's connection beyond yourself, and it's connection with others. I just interviewed a wonderful man who is collecting and authenticating 7 billion acts of goodness. And it was fascinating to talk with him. He's certainly a spiritual person. There are many of them in the book. He's not in that book. He's working on a project that I'm also interested in, which is the people who find causes that they devote themselves to. And part of that, I think, that kind of feeling of spiritual connection, of feeling that you're not alone. You're not alone in the world, and that you are connected to a power beyond yourself, can be very healing, not only uplifting, but takes you out of the kind of sometimes what becomes depression, which is sometimes depression, I think, is almost the opposite of spirituality. Real spirituality doesn't leave much room for depression.
Right. Well, in my way of thinking, to a large extent, your body gives you what you need, and if you need more time on this planet to do something important, like this man, you said he was working on a project with 7 billion people.
Yes, 7 billion acts of goodness.
7 million acts. Well,
billion with a B.
Oh, with a B. Okay, so he should live to be 200 years old because it's going to take him a long time to get around to all those.
Exactly. I'm hoping for that for him. He's doing nothing but good in the world.
You know, that would be the basis of a new book.
Uh-huh.
As he continued on to find these acts of goodness and everything,
yes.
He'll live longer and longer and longer. Okay, well, this has been delightful talking to you today about senior men and how they are reinventing themselves, and people should go over and get a copy of your book, The New Senior Man, and with your interviews and find out what other people are doing and what other people are thinking, and it'll just be good for you.
Thanks so much, Lynn. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and stop today, but maybe sometime in the future you might like to get on another show and talk about something else.
Love to do it.